You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. You know, I feel like to some level how I knew immediately that Gretel and Hansel wasn't going to be as bad as some of the other more recent fairy tale adaptations is just, hey, look, no Chris Hemsworth. It's fine.
Oh, yeah.
There were no Chrises in this movie. No Chrises were harmed during the making of this film, but they should have been.
No Chrises were around to harm this movie.
Sorry, I like Chris Hemsworth a lot, but I'm still like, don't even, if they hand you a Huntsman 3 script, don't even look at it, dude.
Just stop.
Just stop.
I keep on forgetting that movie exists.
Well, yeah, because it's super easy to forget it exists.
We reviewed it, didn't we?
We did. We reviewed both of them.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were on the first one.
I wasn't here for the first one.
Yeah, but Huntsman 2, Winter's War.
Winter's War,
yeah. Oh, good Lord.
War of the Seasons.
Somebody looked at that and went, what a great idea. Let's greenlight that and give it like $100 million.
Emily Blunt was in that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it was that. There's always that point where they just don't know. They're like, their agent says this is a good project. It's got some strong
Jessica Chastain to people. Stop joining franchise sequels.
Seriously. I like it chapter two. I don't care what you say.
Well, I'm also being Dark Phoenix, but
yeah, that's fair. That's very fair. But Gretel and Hansel is, although getting a reasonably wide release, not what you would think a big studio, Orion, which is, I guess, still a big studio. They certainly were at one point.
It's like Dolly the Sheep being cloned. I keep on forgetting it. I thought they like died a long time ago.
Well, it's like, Orion through United Artists releasing.
Which I thought died as well.
Has never actually completely gone away. They've always been hiding in the background.
Yeah.
My first reaction when the movie started was just like, ooh. As soon as I saw the old grainy Orion
logo,
and I was like, wait, is this 1987? What happened?
In many ways, you're going to watch this and think it's 1977, because this is not the type of wide release based on a fairy tale free IP that you would expect to get. No. And when I saw it was directed by Oz Perkins, who is Anthony Perkins' son, who, although starting as an actor, I believe in... I forget, one of the psychos, he played the younger version of
Mario.
Him.
He played the young Norman Bates in Psycho 2. Mm. And, you know, has been an actor for, you know, the better part of two decades. And over, like, maybe the past several years has transitioned to screenwriting and directing. And unfortunately, I haven't seen any of his other work, but I know Chris thinks very highly of
him. I'm a big fan. He did You Are the Pretty Thing Who Lives in the House, which was on Netflix, a Netflix original, which I really liked, a very slow atmospheric ghost story. And then although this is not talking shit about that movie, the still immensely better The Black Coat's Daughter, which is just one of my favorite horror films of the year. It came out about 2 years ago. We talked about it at length on Deliberations of Doom, our horror podcast, how much we loved it. Before we go any further, I'm Chris.
Sarah Jane.
I'm Frank.
Marco.
Santiago was supposed to be here too, but I don't know what happened there. Yeah.
I believe he was called into work.
Well, the story here starts off with Sophia Lillis, who you guys all know from It Chapter 1 and 2, of course. And she plays Gretel. And the reason this is called Gretel and Hansel and not Hansel and Gretel is because decidedly this movie is about Gretel. Yeah. And if you're one of those people... God help you if you're still listening to One of Us and you're one of these people. But if you go, ugh, that sounds like it's going to be some woke feminist nonsense. Well, this movie is not for you. Sorry.
There's a dude on YouTube that made the exact same comment toward Birds of Prey. It's like, I'm not seeing it.
Oh, I saw that whole thing. It's like, well, you're going to take all these beautiful women and make them not sexy? I'm like, what trailer did you see?
Exactly.
I was like, and all these people's response were, you know, they don't make movies specifically so you can jerk off to them, right?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. They were wearing clothing.
But she plays Gretel, 16-year-old girl. This is set in a very bleak... whenever it is. I'm not sure.
It's like no period. It is a very...
17th century?
No, there's no period to this.
There's, I don't know.
There is walking... Watching the production design, the costume choices, Sophia Lillis's very anachronistic haircut, This is a all periods mushed together set in Ireland. Beautiful locations.
I mean, I don't know about all periods. It's not like she's checking her cell phone.
No,
or
but it's like, but there's little elements. Some of the elements of the Witch's Cottage, for example, has some very modern designs, elements,
which I think is. But I think that specifically is there to be anachronistic.
It's very purposely nondescript, which I think it makes it like more like all more like surreal in a way.
Yeah,
especially in a fantasy world, the whole thing.
So she and her brother are after their father has died. Their mother's like, you know, we can't support you. You have to go off on your own way. And so
it really is like the story of Fancy, the Rue McIntyre song in a way.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I will take your word for it, Frank. but they're like, okay, so we're off in the woods. And they end up, of course, eventually, after a few really weird encounters, one of which I'm like, that's the spinoff movie right there.
Yeah, the weird marquee with like the odd like sock suspenders or knee braces.
Yeah,
or
guy, it's like got with like vampire zombies living in his house, then and then never comments on the fact that they are. Like, what was that?
It just never gets mentioned again.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
But he's a nice dude. I guess.
Stay for soup. Come on.
But, oh, I thought you were talking about that weird guy she goes to for a job interview with.
Oh no. Yeah, that's too. Yeah, she goes to a weird like, rapey guy.
So many different movies.
So they stumble across the witch's house, which is not made of candy, if you know, but they look in through a little like eye hole that literally looks like an eye in a window, and they see this table covered with food, and they're like, oh my god, we're starving, like let's break in here. No one's answering the door, and
it's the grimmest tiny home you'll ever see.
An ancienter Alice Creed, who you might remember from the being the Borg queen in Star Trek First Contact.
She was in something else.
She was also the villain in Silent Hill. You know, she's just really good at playing creepy, scary women.
Ghost Story.
She was in Ghost Story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't she in Dead Silence?
I don't know, maybe. She's on a show right now, The Oa. She's on that. Okay. Which sadly is canceled because people are stupid and I hate you.
But fine, I'm sorry I didn't see it.
God damn it.
But keep listening to us.
So. But so she is the witch and she comes out and she more looks like, I mean, she's creepy, but she doesn't look like like you'd expect a witch in a new Hollywood release Hansel and Gretel movie, with the exception of one quality, which is that her fingers are all stained completely black.
You gotta love that touch, though, the unconventional. You know, she's obviously menacing, but, you know, at the same time,
she looks
she's
like
not,
an ink setter.
But her personality is very, like they really try to keep it at the baseline, the bottom level of her saying things that could be interpreted as super creepy, and I think that was the right call. Where she's like, no, it's all good. Mm-hmm. And you go, okay, we all know this story, right? She's going to take these kids, she's going to fatten them up with food, and then she's going to throw them in the oven, but Gretel's going to turn around and throw her in the oven instead. And as the director, we were lucky enough to see this at a private screening where they fed us and everything, fattened us up, gave us booze, and had the director, Oz Perkins, there, was like, I'm trying to make this where it is the original fairy tale. And by that, of course, he means more the unexpurgated, darker Grimm's version. But even so, even he's like, well, yeah, we added a shit ton of stuff into it. And it is, it's a fattened version of the bones of the story. And one of the ways in which that is happening that really does derivate from the original tale is the way that, as in the title, Gretel and Hansel, that it is so focused on her relationship, Sophia Lillis's, with Alice Creed, as it becomes clear that Alice Creed's the witch is really only interested in eating one of the kids, the little brother, and the rest of it is very much a tale that fits right in line with the recent spate of witch movies that it's sort of, or like even the Vavitch, if you will, where it's sort of like, this is about the training of a new young witch, which I thought was a really fascinating angle for this movie to take.
I mean, it's a seduction. She is this creepy older woman, but there's something alluring about the power that she's offering, which she claims to see in Gretel. And of course, Gretel, given her current situation where everything really sucks, suddenly the idea of like, oh, I could be empowered, I could take care of myself in this really hard world, maybe that's something I could think about.
It's a really like roundabout, dark coming of age story in a lot of ways for Gretel. I like that. I like that. It was the dynamics between, you know, this older female and this younger female. Dark Dynamics. Play that really well. But it's like a, not a cat and mouse, but it's sort of like, it was a tug of war between the two of them.
Yeah.
Which I really enjoyed watching.
Yeah, and this was one that was not written by Oz Perkins. He actually had an interesting, one of the best described ways to a little kid who asks the questions, why did you decide to make this movie?
How about he answered, he answered every question, like, he was answering to, like, someone who was in their 40s.
Yeah,
but, it didn't matter.
But him saying, well, you know, I mean, you're watching, and he's basically paraphrasing Truman Capote. You're sitting there, and you're bleeding out of your eyes, trying to write all this stuff, and 90% of what you ever write is never going to get made, but you're working your ass off it, and someone goes, here's a finished script. We're ready to go. We're ready to sign and pay you to do it. Like, if you want to do it, and you go, man, there is a lot to be said for just saying yes to that, you know, and this is one of those, but I can completely see, having seen his previous style, why the script really appealed to him. And I think a different director would have quite possibly done this extremely differently than the choices he made, which definitely fall under the category of art horror.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about, and somebody, I believe you may have been the one who asked, you know, whether or not there was a, any connection to the works of Jodorowsky, which is something we
know. I affirmed there were definitely
connections. And he did not deny.
He did not deny.
Very strongly, like, these are the things you ripped off, right? And he was like, yeah, I kind of did. But again, hey, it's a work for hire. You're coming up with ideas on the fly. And definitely it fits within the world that he's creating. It certainly doesn't take you out of it, because he's already established that this is not a specific time or era. So you can have these other influences here. I kept noticing, like, I talked about the Orion logo, or just even the credits, which look kind of film grainy, and the use of deep blues and ambers during nighttime scenes, which just made me think of every, you know, like, horror movie I saw in the 80s. It felt rooted in that era. And I appreciated that. I mean, it gives it a level of class where it's kind of like the old Hammer films, where it's like, we're going to put you in these beautiful, lush environments, and you're just going to soak up the atmosphere.
You see, I felt that a lot in the indoor scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever they were in the witch's home, which, you know, really, it's like one of those things you walk in and it just expands into this vast sort of, like,
it looked,
you know.
It looked like if House of Leaves had been designed by the guy who designed the sets for Suspiria.
Yeah, pretty much. And it really feels like this European horror film, like, from the 70s. It felt like, you know, something like Nosferatu, or, you know, Cat People, like one of those sort of, you know, the 70s remakes of those films. But, man, I got to tell you, I was not that, I didn't feel the same whenever we went outside during the daytime. I felt like I was watching, you know, that in the late 90s, there were all these, like, you know, music video style directors, you know,
where
that were just
yeah,
they were just like,
we switched over the handheld.
And, you know,
and,
yeah, exactly. I felt like,
I didn't care for that part.
Yeah, that's the style we were at every time we went outside during the day. And it was this huge, It was really jarring for me, because it's two very different visual styles, and the one worked and was so dynamic, made the story more dynamic, but then the other one just sort of, like, took me out of that. I don't know.
That seemed like it was on purpose, though, because the house was so small.
Claustrophobic, even.
Yeah, I mean, even though the hall was really big, but Gretel had to duck when she was going into the bedrooms. And then, you know, the little door that went downstairs, that was really small and low.
It was beautiful, all of that.
So I think when you went outside, it was just, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the outside didn't feel supernatural. It just felt creepy because you're in the woods, whereas you are definitely in some kind of weird supernatural state once you enter the witch's house.
But there are still even aspects in some of the outdoor scenes that are definitely supernatural, and the idea of whatever this darkness is, it's closing in. Like, there's a sequence where the little kid's wandering through the woods, the little brother, and there's, like, all these kids' shoes hung from trees and a fog that's rolling in. And there's regular shots of, we see, of the there's a fairy tale the movie starts off with that becomes sort of an iconic imagery throughout it, with some of these things that may or may not be real, especially Gretel is saying, of witches with these very particular type of weird hat, as opposed to the traditional witch's hat, that are constantly appearing whenever they're out in the woods. But I do agree with you completely, Frank, in that he was kind of like, it felt like a movie that he was not as firmly interested in making, maybe, as his last film, in that he's just throwing a lot of stuff at the wall with the outdoor scenes. Like, he keeps trying different effects and shots. There's a lot of, like, you know, there's shots where the camera's clearly attached to the actress and they're doing that kind of shaky cam type thing, run around, and there's literally film aspect changes going on as well. And I felt like there was a lot of like, he's still a young director. This is still only like his third film, I believe. And it felt a lot of like, well, here's my opportunity to just try some shit I always wanted to try.
Yeah, no, that's the benefit of just having something that's ready to be filmed, is that you can just go ahead and, throw things at the wall and see what sticks. I think also, though, he had so much more to play with inside the witch's house. As opposed to, how many times can you shoot a tree and make it look, interesting?
Right. I mean, this is shot in Ireland, and beautifully so, but, especially if you're used to working in a studio environment or interiors, and he certainly has a strength for shooting interiors. But, look, we gotta shoot this scene because it's going to get dark in 10 minutes and it's going to start raining. So, yeah, just strap the camera on her and go. That's fine. the outdoor stuff doesn't feel designed. It is, like Chris said, I think kind of thrown at the wall. Like, let's just find an interesting way to do it and move on. Whereas the stuff inside the cabin seems very well thought out, very designed.
And the cabin itself, like I said, is almost a character in the film.
It's so sprawling in the use of colors,
the way it's bigger than it could ever possibly be on the inside.
It's got that
House of Leaves aspect to it, where it's like you keep discovering is bigger than it could possibly actually be. But in a way, the movie doesn't announce it. You just kind of realize it yourself. Yeah. It's a creepy aspect to it. You're like, what's going on there? And all that to some degree ties into this fairy tale that we saw at the beginning of this that does indeed become explained, to a point where I go, I almost feel like it would have been better if you hadn't explained it and just left it more ambiguous, because it gets super specific with saying, well, here's how that fairy tale relates to actually what the truth is. And I was like, I'm not sure you needed to do that.
It has something that I hate in a lot of movies. As much as I enjoyed this movie, there was the first few minutes I started to have this creeping dread that I was going to just not like it, because it starts off in a way I don't care for, which is you do this sort of flashback narration, once upon a time thing. We cut to the present day within the context of the story, present day, and you have voiceover narration from the characters. Like, this movie's been going on for over 5 or 7 minutes now, and I've gotten two sets of narrations. The movie isn't starting yet. But once it does find its footing, it's really effective. It just takes a little while to get there. It's very languidly paced.
I think it throws a lot of very interesting visual stuff out right off the bat. Like I said, especially some of the stuff right off the bat, I was like, that's right out of Holy Mountain by Alejandro Jodorowsky. Which, once again, the director did not deny.
He's proud of it.
But it's not till you actually get to the witch's house that the film kind of, like, narratively super finds its footing. Because before that, it's kind of all over the place. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely trying to set a mood, and I think it does that pretty well, but it was a lot of like, so where are we going with this?
And that's also what you're waiting for, is to get to the witch's house. And even that's with the story, knows that's when the motors really, really start to kick in.
It's like odd. It's like the weirdest, most beautiful filler.
Go here and we meet a weird guy, and then we go to another place and we meet another weird guy, but then a nice guy comes and saves us, and then we keep on walking. One thing, and this is not a spoiler, but I'm going to throw it out there now, because if you're like me, you're not going to enjoy the movie because you're such a neurotic. You're going to be waiting for this to happen. There are no breadcrumbs in this movie.
Was that what you were waiting for?
No, literally, because I knew the story well enough.
They did keep talking about a crumb cake.
Crumb cake, yeah. But the most famous, it'd be like telling the story of Jack and the Beanstalk and magic beans never show up. The most famous element in this story
Osbergen's next film.
There you go. The most famous element, of course, is that the parents send them away. The wicked stepmother and the poor father, it's a famine. We can't support you. They drop him off in the woods, but Hansel, being the smart little boy he is, has left some pebbles, comes back home, and they're like, fuck, all right, we're going to do this again, but no pebbles this time. So he leaves a trail of breadcrumbs. The birds in the forest eat all the bread, and they get completely lost in the woods, and that's when they find the gingerbread house that's run by the witch.
He's being a canon queen about Hansel and Gretel.
I know, that's the thing, though. I kept thinking...
That's not my Hansel and Gretel.
But this is not a deconstructionist work. I thought, okay, at some point, once I got over that, I was like, I see what he's doing here. And I was thrown off, because in the beginning, during the opening, not the Q&A, but during the introduction, Osgood Perkins said, I hate it when I go see an adaptation of a fairy tale and it just becomes something else. we're doing the fairy tale. So I kept waiting for like all the actual elements, not to be done slavishly, but I was waiting for them to show up and see how he puts a twist on it. But obviously he just kind of, it did become something else contrary to what he said. However, I think like Chris said, he took the bones of that story and added, I disagree with you about adding fat to it. I think he added meat to it. There's some tissue here.
Expanded on it.
Yeah, yeah, and some of that
works. I didn't mean that in a negative way.
I know what you mean, though. Yeah, it's just sometimes people add fat and sometimes people add meat. And he threw a lot of meat, but not enough of the fat that gives it the flavor. That's the key to fat people.
Which
fat.
Is, to him, breadcrumbs.
Fat gives it flavor.
Fat is breadcrumbs. There's no flavor. Where's the flavor,
the
family?
Have you ever gone to like Patrizia's and get like the bread and you dip it in that bone marrow butter? It's like, oh my God, it's excellent. You should try it.
Wow, we went off on a whole thing. Wow. Now I'm hungry.
That's my Yelp review, by the way. no, but seriously, Sarah Jane, what were you saying about you had a comment earlier and I think we cut you off and I apologize for that.
I don't know.
She said, it's been so long since you monologued.
Well, I was going to say that it did remind me of Suspiria in a way, because in the school, in the original Suspiria, not the remake, which I haven't seen, the doorknobs are like really high. I mean, mm-hmm. Argento makes it so it is like a fairy tale. And sometimes you don't even notice that until you watch it like the third or the fourth time.
The
like,
window design was right out of Suspiria.
Yeah.
Like, where I was like, oh, those are the windows from Suspiria. Like the
window design. The bed that she was sleeping in was really small. It was way bigger mm-hmm. than she was.
Right.
So, you know, that was more fairy tale stuff. This kind of reminded me of Hagazusa. Did anybody see that?
I saw that.
It reminded me of that just because of the way, because there's not a lot of stuff happening in that one either.
I'm not a fan of Hagazusa, I should say, and I know that people went crazy for it at the festival circuit, and I watched it a second time going, maybe I missed something, and went, nah, this is just not for me.
I didn't love it, but the visuals of this one, the forest stuff especially, and mm-hmm. the way it was paced, because this was kind of slow. When it finally got toward the end, I was like, oh, okay. Because I wanted to check my watch about a half an hour before it was over.
It's definitely slower paced, but it also, at 87 minutes, that's an in and out for a movie like of this type, which there's too many people making this type of film that are like 2.5 hours and you need to stop that.
Yeah.
If you're making a sort of film that's like this, it needs to be short. It should be shorter like this, in like an hour and a half maximum.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they're smart enough to do that. I think what keeps this film alive more than, say, Hagazusa did is there's so much great interaction between Sophia Lillis and Alice Creech.
Yeah,
they're back really, and forth, and the whole, as you're watching this sort of, like, you know, evil Harry Potter thing going on between them, is the most interesting part of this film.
It's two alpha females going at different ends of the spectrum, and it really is. It becomes like this... one needs to overtake the other, mm-hmm. ultimately. And, yeah, I love that. I mean, I don't know the original fairy tale.
You don't know the original Hansel and Gretel?
I mean,
I don't know.
I don't know, like, if this, how... I mean, fairy tales... I mean, there's 75 different versions of
Cinderella.
There's
variation. Sure,
yes. I mean, yeah. Sure. So I don't know which... How accurate this is to which version or whatnot. But,
right.
I mean, I love the spin on it.
Right? Yeah. I was going to say, I was like, wait,
I mean,
hold on.
Yeah, I know Hansel and Gretel, but yeah.
All right, let's go to final thoughts. Frank, keep going.
Yeah. I loved, like Carolyn was saying, I love what they did with the mythology of this. With, you know, I really think they expanded on the story, and they, but it felt very authentic at the same time. I do love that this is so ambiguous in terms of the era, in terms of really the country. You know, Sophia Lillis is great. Alice Creek is great. I really think that the two different styles were a little too jarring for me. And I think that, yeah, it's right. Let's see what would make this interesting when we're running in the forest. And then became like, all right, let's just get it. Let's just get it because we're losing the light. And I want to go shoot my house. Yeah, I want to shoot the house already. But it's a really interesting film. It's a really interesting take. And I think it's horror. What did he say? He said it's not really horror, but it's a fairy tale. I think it is horror.
No, he did definitely say it was horror.
He said it was a fairy tale first.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's it. Yeah, that's
saying finding the horror aspects of the fairy tale and emphasizing them.
And I love this. This is my kind of horror. It is a sort of slow burn. It's about the tension that's simmering and then it finally just boils over in the end. But man, the visuals, whenever we're inside, they're breathtaking. They really are. And It has that sort of European flavor to it, and yeah, it's great. I don't have that much complaints, except for that, you know, whenever we have to leave and go outside, we have more fun in the witch's house. What can I say? Yeah, so I'm going to give this 7 out of 10. You know, just Oz Perkins, because he seems like a cool guy, and I would like to, yeah, I'd like to hang
he's
out
a
with
guy
him.
You'd want to have a beer with.
I had more fun listening to him than I did watching the movie sometimes.
He is a guy, like, now I know, like, oh, he's if he's ever doing a Q&A, stay for the Q&A.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
He's really entertaining.
Yeah. It's a good movie, but he's even better.
Marco.
Yeah, as much as I enjoy this, I did have some problems with it. Up front, I felt it was had a convoluted, too many backstories that do eventually pay off, but at 87 minutes, you really can't afford to drag. And I felt it took a long time, that first act of them just going from place to place to place and getting the backstory. But things start cooking once Alice Krieg shows up, and she's always great. She is one of the fantastic, like, just character actors. I'm sure at some point in her career, she thought, fuck, another evil, crazy old woman. I'm tired of it. But she is really good at it, and she just chews up all the scenery. That's the best choice this movie makes, is rather than her just trying to eat Gretel, going, you know what, I see something in this girl and that I can pass on to her. And that contest of wills between these two powerful women who are at very different ages is actually pretty gripping. And that's a shame, because a lot of times when she's not in the picture or they leave the cabin, things get a lot less interesting for me. Nevertheless, the atmosphere is really great. Production design is really cool. And the score, which we haven't talked about, is this really cool synth score.
Like, I credited it as Rob.
Yeah, R-O-B.
But French musician Robin Coudert,
yeah,
who apparently has a sizable career before this film. But I love that he's just called Rob.
Rob, on the credits. Well, it's French. I believe it's called Rob.
Rob.
Or Rub. I don't know. Either way, that was the sonic glue that held a lot of it together, because once we got in there, I'm like, oh, it's like a modern day giallo cross with a fairy tale. I dug it. I'm going to give it 7 out of 10 blackened fingers.
Sarah Jane?
I thought the production design was really beautiful. I did like the score also. I thought that was great. I liked Sophia Ellis. Is that her name?
Lilis.
Oh, Lilis. Okay, I'm sorry, Sophia. I thought she was really good. She had a Rosemary's Baby vibe going on with the hair and the with her little dress.
Yeah,
she had that going on. So,
little Mia Farrow. Yeah,
yeah.
A lot of stuff comes from the 70s in this film.
Yeah. So yeah, I really liked the score was also really great. There was something I can't put my finger on it why I didn't love it, but I did like it. So I'm going to give it 7.5. Well, we've already mentioned his name, but I'm going to give it 7.5 Robs out of 10.
Yeah, I can't say I'm madly in love with this film, but it is a movie that I really look forward to re-experiencing, with now the expectations being different. Because I had no idea what to expect other than my feelings about, you know, seeing Oz Perkins' previous films. Weirdly, at the beginning, at the intro, he was like, so this is kind of for younger people, and it's not wildly gory or anything. It has gross and horror moments, but it's not over the top gory. No. It's more like stuff that's like, wow, when you think about what that is, that's really fucking sick.
Yeah, right?
There was a whole bunch of like 10 and 11 year olds who for worst part of some group were brought into the screening. And I suspect most of them were like, just, I mean, they're hardened. I mean, he asked at one point at the Q&A, have y'all seen the It movies? And like, they all raise their hands, and those are rated R. Okay, this is PG-13, PG. And I mean, like I said, there's nothing too harsh here. But this is a film that, like, if you took 50 11-year-olds and put them in front of this movie, one or two of them would go, I'm going to be a film director when I grow up after seeing it. Would be like, wow, I've never seen anything like this. Why is no one showing me these movies? And be really blown away. And the rest of them are going to be bored out of their ass watching it, going like, this is not designed for me at all, because it is a slow burn. This is designed for adults. Definitely. At least that's the audience that is going to enjoy it. And the audience that enjoys art horror and ambient slow burn art horror. And guess what? That's me.
Me too.
And I find overall that this was quite pleasant, even refreshing in some ways. There's definitely a little too much of like, we're trying a bunch of different stuff when it felt like this movie needed a little more sense of continuity in terms of what he's doing with the camera. And I'm really only referring to the camera work. I think everything else is great, the way it looks and ties together the art direction and the set design and the costumes and everything. But the camera work gets a little like what, and some of the cinematography choices specifically get a little like, were you just experimenting and you just kept it? But that's fine. I don't, none of it's unlikable. It's just a little jarring, maybe.
Yeah.
But I do think this is overall a pretty damn good movie. I think this movie's going to decidedly find its audience who's going to be madly in love with it. And not for the least of reasons, because it is a very female forward film. And obviously that's a thing right now that is very much in vogue. And I hope that vogue never goes away. And it's a well done one for that. Sophia Lillis is obviously one of those young actresses. Martin Thomas was sitting next to me and he's like, so do they really just pretty much put Amy Adams in a clone tank? And it's like, would anyone be wildly surprised at this point to find out they've been doing that for decades with various actors? Because there's always like that other actor that comes out, you're like, it's like them, but only slightly different.
Yeah. He's the new this, or yeah, they're the new that.
Samara Weaving, I'm always like, so they can age up clone Margot Robbie already? I don't know. Wow, it's fascinating.
That girl from Sex Education looks a lot like Margot Robbie.
She does as well. She's got that going as well. Obviously, that's the thing now everybody wants. Everybody wants to clone Robbie right now. I don't know what's going on. But Sophia Lillis is definitely no question. I can't believe they didn't make the joke, because he was talking about, I saw her in It. I'm not a fan of the movie, but I was like, wow, she's mesmerizing. And we have to cast her. And I was like, you're not going to make the she's an It girl joke? I was like, what is going on right now? Someone make this joke. I will kill you all.
But this is also the guy crazy. Who thought that he was making a movie for 12-year-olds.
Yeah, true. Yeah. True. And then Alice Creed is just every time you ever see her in anything, she just grabs a hold of the camera and fucking commands it. She's just got that sort of like magnetism that's just undeniable. She was exactly the right person to be cast in this part. And I don't think this would be anywhere near as good of a movie without her. And
no,
with a different casting choice, I don't think would have worked.
Even
Michelle Pfeiffer would have been not as good.
I wouldn't want Michelle Pfeiffer in this movie. It would have been wrong for her. I don't want her in everything.
Sigourney Weaver, who did a Snow White horror movie back in the 90s.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
You know,
Golden Globe.
I feel like a lot of actors would have played this the wrong way, and she felt like she was completely in touch with what the director wanted, and matches what that's supposed to be really, really well. She's creepy, but never until she's supposed to be too creepy, and just in that right sort of balance. And there's that connection between her and Sophia Lillis where you're like almost rooting for them, that whole thing to work. Is there a way we could do this without eating Hansel?
Yeah.
She was never over the top. She was perfect.
But I really did overall enjoy this. Even kind of admire a lot of the choices that it made here. And it firmly cements Oz Perkins to me, one of the most interesting guys working in horror today. I'm going to give this 8 out of 10 breadcrumbs that Marco was really upset about not getting.
No. Really? You didn't go with the mushrooms?
Well, I was hungry still.
You didn't go with the mushrooms?
Not with the mushrooms.
I thought you were going with the mushrooms.
I thought somebody was going to do the...
God.
Nobody did that.
Nobody did that. Sorry, folks. We failed you yet again.